Okay, if you have your Bibles, go to Esther chapter 6. A couple weeks ago, we left off after, I think, reading the first three verses of Esther chapter 6. And you remember, this is, we left the king, had insomnia that night, couldn't go to sleep. And so he asked somebody to bring in the history of the kingdom and read it to him. It'd be like getting the church minutes and reading the church minutes. Most of them are pretty boring, to put you to sleep. And they read about incident where Mordecai had warned the king through Esther that two of his servants wanted to kill him. Now, I'll say something a little bit later about this, but back in this day, it was normal for people to kill the king and try to take over the kingdom. You remember back, especially in the northern kingdom, when I think his name was Omri, Ahab's father, and the two or three kings before then. Some of them, like one of them, only ruled for a couple weeks because people went in and killed them and took over. And so Mordecai had heard about this plot to kill the king. He told Esther, warned Esther. Esther warned the king. They investigated it. Those two guys were killed, and they recorded it in the history of the kingdom. So this night the king couldn't sleep. They were reading that part, and the king says, well, what? How did we reward Mordecai for telling us about this plot? And, you know, they read down, well, and didn't say nothing. We apparently didn't do nothing for him. Well, just at that moment, Haman comes into the court. Now, I believe, just like the king couldn't sleep, Haman couldn't sleep that night either. He was up all night plotting. Remember, he had just built a gallows 75 foot high on the advice of his wife and friends, and he was coming early to the king, said, I'd like permission to hang Mordecai. I mean, he doesn't bow down, he doesn't show respect to me, doesn't honor me, which, you know, everybody else does, and I'd like your permission to hang him on this gallows. And so the king must have heard him come in, because when he had this conversation with his servants, he said, well, find out who's in the court. Find out who just came in. So the servant goes out there and he says, it was Haman. And the king said, well, have him come in here. In verse 4 of chapter 6, and the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman comes in. And before he can get a word out of his mouth, the king says, Haman, what can we do for somebody who I want to honor? I mean, I'll just add some words to it. He said, there's somebody in my kingdom that I just want to let them know how much I appreciate them, and that I have, you know, some very positive and warm thoughts toward them, and I want to reward them. Now, here's Haman. Now, remember, he was the prime minister. Even from this chapter, we can see that he had access to the king anytime he wanted. The king had given him a ring to represent the king's authority. Haman had paid him a lot of money to get permission to kill the Jews. So here's what Haman's thought. Here's what Haman thought when the king asked this question. Well, he must be talking about me. Who else in the kingdom more than me would he want to honor? And so Haman said, I got to think of something good. So he says, here's what we ought to do if you really want to honor somebody. Get some of your old clothes and put them on this guy. Get your crown. Get your horse. Dress the man in your clothes. Put your crown on his head. Put him on your horse and have one of your most noble princes lead him through the city, crying out, this is what happens to a person who the king desires to honor. And Haman said, this will be wonderful. See, I sort of think in the back of his mind, Haman was thinking, one of these days I'm going to get the king. I'm going to kill the king. I'm going to be king. And if people see me with the king's clothes and the king's crown, riding on the king's horse, it'll set the stage for when I take over. And so he's standing there ready for, you know, all this to be done to him. And the king says, that's a wonderful idea. Go get Mordecai the Jew and do exactly what you said to him. Now, again, just get the picture. Here's Haman. He comes in to ask the king to hang Mordecai. And this wonderful idea that he has, now he has to do to Mordecai. So don't tell me God doesn't have a sense of humor. I mean, he's got to have a sense of humor. Let's go down to verse 11. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor." Now, here's a wonderful illustration of that verse that says, pride goeth before a fall. Because again, and I was thinking back, I can remember one time at work, we were at a banquet, and every year my boss's boss gives out this, he calls it the loving cup or something like that. And he picks it out himself, and he got up there and he started talking about this guy that had been with the organization over 30 years, knew a lot of people, and people came to him and asked him a lot of questions. And I was sitting out there, you know, there ain't many people around that have 30 years. I said, he must be going to give it to me. And I like it because he fills it up with little candy bars. I said, this is going to be really good. And he got all through with his description. He says, John Hart, I want you to come up here. So I sort of know what Haman felt like because, you know, I'm sitting there expecting to get this and then somebody else gets it. But we got to be careful because I believe God does have a sense of humor. And I believe when we get too proud, God will do stuff to us to knock us down a notch and remind us sort of, you know, who we are and what we are. And I think the best example of that in the Bible is O King Nebuchadnezzar. Remember he had that dream where big tree and somebody come and cut it down and the stump was left in the earth. And I can't remember how the tree did it, but somehow seven seasons or something passed over him and he went to live with the animals. And he didn't understand what the dream was, so Daniel came in and said, hey, you're the tree, and you need to start doing right and not be so proud because God says he's going to take away the kingdom from you. You're going to go out and live like an animal. Now, the kingdom's going to be restored to you, but it'd be better to avoid this altogether. And for a year, I think the Bible says in the book of Daniel, he did. He recognized God, but one day he was walking through the city that he'd built. And it used to be one of the seven wonders of the world with the Hanging Gardens, Babylon, the Hanging Gardens, and just a beautiful place. And he was walking around and said, look at all this stuff that I've built. And God said, okay. And he lost his reason. He went out to live with the animals for seven seasons. I don't know if it was 7 years or seven seasons, like fall, winter, but yeah. As he said, his fingernails grew like claws. It didn't cut his hair. He lived out in the dew, wet his back every morning. And then his reason returned. And he came back and said, now I know that God's God. And I just need to remember who I am in relationship to God. And as do we all. He's God. I think of that verse that David wrote. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Like Brother Leonard prayed a minute ago, not only do he save us, he puts up with us. Now, why does he do that? Because he loves us, but he's God. And we're just, you know, when you can look at everything he's made, why? There's no other reason but that he loves us. But we just need to remember, in God's sight, we ain't such hot stuff. we just need to remember that. Okay, so verse 12, and Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. He didn't know what was happening. I mean, he just couldn't understand. His world was beginning to fall apart. In verse 13, and Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, unto him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. Now, not a very encouraging message from his wife. And by the way, it was his wife and his friends who said, hey, why don't you make this gallows and then go to the king and ask him, you know, if you can hang Mordecai on. And now they're telling him, boy, you're in trouble. I mean, if this has started to happen, if I was him, look, it was your guy's idea. I mean, you're the one that put me up to it. And so while he was telling him all this, the king's messengers came and said, hey, don't forget the banquet that Esther invited you to yesterday. Remember, she had had a banquet for the king. She was going to ask the king for the life of her people. And she invited the king and Haman, and she didn't have enough courage to ask the first time. And the king says, hey, go ahead, ask. I'll give you half of my kingdom. What do you want? And she said, well, I want you to come back tomorrow, and then I'll tell you what I want. So now it's tomorrow. They come to Haman's house and said, hey, come on, it's about to start. Hurry up. So again, just get the sequence of events. He doesn't sleep making this plan to go ask the king to hang Mordecai. He ends up leading Mordecai through the gate, the streets of the city, giving honor to him. He goes home, and his wife and his friend says, man, you're in trouble. And then, before he can even think about it, here comes the king's servants. Come on, the banquet's about to start. So in chapter 7, so the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? And it shall be performed even to the half of the kingdom. And what the king was saying, I'll give you anything you want. Just tell me what you want. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king. And she had. Remember, she was picked by him. And if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. Now again, Esther had not told anybody that she was a Jew yet. Mordecai had already revealed that he was a Jew. That's why Haman wanted to kill all the Jews. But Esther had not told anybody yet. She goes on, for we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. What she was saying was, you know, if the rule had gone out, if we were just going to be sold as slaves, as servants, I wouldn't say anything. Although, you'd be really missing something. That's what she's saying here when she said, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage, you would miss me if I was taken to be a slave. And if that's all there was, I wouldn't be here asking you. But they want to destroy us. They want to kill us. And then look at verse 5. Then King Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he and where is he that doth presume in his heart to do so? King says, who would do something like this? Who would have the audacity to take the life of the queen? Now, again, the king is the one that, you know, let Haman put his seal on it and send it out. And, I mean, again, he had no idea Esther was a Jew, but he was willing to kill all the Jews without knowing who they are. You know, and here's what I was thinking. You know, sometimes we hear about abortions. And sometimes we hear, I can't remember his name, the guy that was helping people commit suicide, Kevorkian. Yeah, we heard about that, and you know we get upset about that. But I was just thinking now, if that happened in my family, I get a lot more excited about it than I did when I heard it was just happening to somebody else. I mean, if it was happening like in one of my brother's families, I'd get a lot more excited. And here's the king. He had signed this decree, or let the decree be signed, that all these people were to be killed, and he didn't think anything about it. I mean, remember when he did it, and he agreed to do it, they went on drinking. Didn't think about the individuals, didn't think about the people who were going to be killed. But now that it's come home, now that it's happening in his family, it meant a whole lot more to him. He said, who would do this? Who would have the audacity to do this? And then verse 6. Now remember, here's Haman. I can just see him. You know, back in those days, they were laid on couches. He's there enjoying the fact that he is the only one invited with the king to this banquet. Again, I think he was feeling pretty smug. Ain't nobody else here but me. No, but none, you know, not the other servants, none of the other noble people, just me and the king. And so he's sitting there, and I mean, he's probably listening to this conversation, you know, with only one ear, not realizing what's about to happen. And in verse 6, and Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. I bet you he woke up all the way then, don't you think, Brother Terry? I mean, I think if he was only half listening, oh boy, he was awake. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king, rising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, I mean, he was so mad, he went into the palace garden. He had to think. I mean, he said, and I'm sure he was thinking, well, I was a part of this too. I let Haman do this. And Haman stood up to make requests for his life to Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Then the king returned out of the palace garden unto the place of the banquet of wine, and Haman was fallen upon the bed whereupon Esther was, so he was begging for his life. So I'm sure he got down on his knees and, you know, put his hands on the bed. And then said the king, will he force the queen also before me in the house? I mean, he accused Haman of something he wasn't doing, but that's what it looked like. And as the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. The other servants that were there, I mean, the king didn't have to say anything. The other servants knew exactly what they needed to do. So they covered his face. And Harbonah, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. And then the king said, hang him there upon thereon. I'm sure, you know, here you can see just a picture. Here was a balcony. And Haman's house was probably close to the palace. So one of the servants says, hey, king, you see that thing over there? That 75-foot thing? That's a gallows that this guy made to hang Mordecai on. And the king said, well, good. Take him over there and hang him on his own gallows. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Now, a couple more things in and I'll quit. Here's Haman. He made this gallows. I'm going to get Mordecai. I'm going to get him. And he ends up getting hanged on his own gallows. And remind me of that verse in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. I mean, Haman got exact. He sowed hatred. He sowed a bitter spirit. He sowed wanting to kill somebody. That had not done anything to him. And he ended up getting the very thing they intended to happen for Mordecai. Now, that verse, there's many, many examples of that verse in the Bible. I'll just give you a couple real quick. Ahab. When Ahab wanted Naboth's vineyard, you remember the story. The vineyard was next to the palace. And Ahab said, he was a king. He said, hey, Naboth, I'll give you a better piece of land. Let's trade, because I want this for my garden right here next to the palace. And Naboth said, well, no, this piece of property has been in my family for a long time. Jews didn't trade their property. I mean, it was part of their, I mean, you know, traced it back to their ancestors. I can't trade it. I can't sell it to you. So Jezebel, you know, got two guys to lie about him, said he cursed God. He committed blasphemy. They took him out and killed him. And brutally killed him. And the prophet came to him and said, in the same place that the dogs licked the blood of Naboth, they're going to lick your blood. And Ahab said, no, they're not, because I'm not going to go near anything. I'm not going to go near that place. Well, I'll just give you the Paul Harvey rest of the story. When Ahab was killed in that battle, they took his chariot and they washed it in the very place where the dogs licked up the blood of Naboth. What he sowed, he reaped. He got exactly what he sowed. Jacob tricked his brother out of the birthright, tricked his dad out of the blessing, deceived him. So when he goes and works 7 years for Rachel, he goes to his father-in-law, Laban, and says, I've kept my part of the bargain. I worked 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. I want her tonight. And so Laban said, okay. And so they have a big feast. They get drunk. It's dark. He goes into a tent with whom he assumes it's Rachel. And in the morning, it turns out to be Leah. And then, what'd you say? Well, he's just getting what he sold. I mean, he was a deceiver. He got deceived. And then his kids, one day, his boys, 11 of them, 10 of them, come home. Hey, Dad, we found this coat of many colors. Got blood on it. Is it Joseph's? Well, it is. He must have gotten eaten up by an animal. So his sons, I mean, the same thing that he did to his brother and the same thing he did to his dad, he got the same thing back from his father-in-law and from his sons. So, and this principle still works today. Adam and Chantel were over last night. We were watching the primary results and it got to be about 11 o'clock. I said, Chantel, you need to go home. The baby cannot go to sleep with you up this late. And she said, nah, the baby can go to sleep anytime he wants to. She said he. The baby can go to sleep anytime he wants to. So I was talking to Linda today. She said, oh, no, you got to tell her. When I was pregnant with my daughter, at 6 o'clock at night, I lay down. I might have gone to sleep, but I lay down. And I didn't get up till 8 o'clock the next morning. And when my daughter was born at 6 o'clock, she went to sleep, and she slept through till 8 o'clock in the morning. She said, just tell her, she is forming habits for that child right now. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds pretty good to me. But same thing. The principle of sowing and reaping is still true today. Now, I'll give you just a couple examples, and then I'll quit. I really will. I've kept you longer than I wanted to. But I'll give you a couple. You know, we usually think of this verse in relationship to sin. Hey, if you sin, you know, you're going to get it back. But let me just give you a couple of examples you might not think about. And I was thinking about this. I listened to a couple of Adam's Wednesday night prayer meeting Bible studies on Sunday night after I got home. And this would apply, well, this applied to all of us. Time with our kids. The amount of time that we spend with our kids. I'll admit to you, when Adam and Jessica were little, I spent way too much time working, and I was gone way too much from home. So I'm trying to make it up now. I'm spending as much time with them as I can, because here's what's going to happen. The amount of time we spend with our kids is the amount of time they're going to spend with us when we get old. Huh? That's the way it works. We reap what we sow. So if you're too busy for your kids when they're at home, when they move out, they're going to be too busy when we get old and want to spend some time with them. So we need to plant what we want to sow. Same thing, and you probably might think about this one, but forgiveness. If we won't forgive somebody, get ready, because there's going to be somebody that won't forgive us, because this principle works. We will reap what we sow. Haman's a good example of that. Okay, anybody have any questions?